Hi, and welcome to Right to Life of Michigan's LifeBeat podcast. Today, we are going to be doing another multicultural outreach segment, and this segment is going to be including what youth can do in the pro-life movement to help the unborn. So stay tuned, and I hope you enjoy.
What can young people do in the pro-life conversation? Today, Stephanie Estes and Rita Somo give us examples of what young people today can do to make a difference, how they can be empowered to step up in their communities and educate and serve the unborn. They also share with us how they started when they were young, how they were encouraged by family and friends, and how they go about making a difference and inspiring young people to do the same.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us tonight for this wonderful discussion we're planning to have about empowering our youth in the pro-life movement. My name is Stephanie Estes, and I am happy to be here. I am a lifelong Detroiter, born and raised in Detroit. I have 9 siblings. I've been married about went on 5 years now. I inherited 4 beautiful stepchildren and 5 grandchildren. I am a devout Christian. And of course, as such, that would mean that I am pro-life. I love life. In fact, one of the things that has always inspired me is hearing my mom, before she passed, talk to me about all the circumstances that surrounded my birth. And even though they said that I would not live, her life was threatened by me being born. She made the choice for life, by her faith and the faith of our church family, a lot of the birth defects they said I would have, they just disappeared. So I am grateful for life. I'm grateful to be here. I think every day is a gift, and I'm excited to be part of the Black Leadership Committee of Right to Life of Michigan. I feel privileged to be part of an organization that is fighting the good fight for those who cannot speak for themselves. And I'm just glad to be here. Anything that we can ever do for you, just reach out to us anytime, online, through our Facebook page, through any medium you want. And we'd be glad to help in this fight. There's a lot of information we can provide, even presentations we can do. My fellow co-host is here, and I'm going to let her introduce herself and tell us a little bit about herself.
Thank you, Stephanie. My name is Rita Somo. I'm part of the Chaldean Leadership Committee, and I'm the director of the youth programs. I was also born in Detroit. I was raised mostly in Detroit, but I think I was about 11 or 12 years old. We moved to California and San Diego, and then we moved back to Michigan when I was a junior in high school. So I wasn't happy about that, but now I'll never go back. I think for me, growing up in the Chaldean community, everything is taboo. You have to live like a certain expectation. Oh, very old school traditions, values. I'm firstborn generation here. So my parents actually came from Iraq in 76, I think. Yeah, 1976. And they basically came here with nothing in their pockets, with the clothes on their back.
Wow.
And started a life. So I know my mom was pregnant when, you know, she got married and they were on their way to America, and she had a little brother. I'm the middle child. I have another brother who's younger than me. And we were 11 years apart.
Wow. I'll
tell you about that one in a bit. But for me, my story actually started out kind of funny because my parents migrated here in America. you know, my dad was struggling being the, you know, breadwinner and trying to raise his family in a new country where they barely knew any English. And then my mom gets pregnant. So her to get an abortion, because that was the thing back then in the 70s, didn't really consider how it, you know, affects the Christian faith or, you know, the value of life. It was just more leaning towards, you know, how can we afford another child? And my mom prayed and prayed. She really wanted me. Yeah, we're Catholic. So there's Saint Rita. So she started praying like a novena, which is a 9-day prayer to Saint Rita, and, you know, begged her and the Blessed Mary, Blessed Virgin Mary, to get some sort of miracle to change my dad's mind at birth. So that way he, you know, doesn't encourage her to continue getting an abortion. Right. So she promised, like, if, you know, my dad changes his mind, she'll name me Rita after Saint Rita and Mary after Jesus's mother. So that's my middle name, is Mary. So I'm Rita Mary Somo. And it was actually funny because my mom was at the doctor on, you know, about to get an abortion. She was in the stirrups and she started crying. And my dad's like, do you really not want to do this? And she said, no. And he said, let's go. So
pretty good.
So yeah, and I found that out till, I didn't even find that out until I was like, I think 18 or 19 years old, never knew.
Wow.
Sex was definitely not even a topic of conversation in our household.
Right.
Just, you don't have sex till you get married. There's no conversation.
Sure. Sure.
So yeah. I never considered like what abortion does to our community. And anybody who's, you know, struggling or making that decision, affects that come of it.
Right.
When I was forced with, well, gosh, if I was aborted, you know, I wouldn't have existed. And then I think at 25 is when I completely changed my whole mindset on, you know, the dignity of life and, you know, supporting life itself.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, you know, I've been working with my community. I'm very involved with my church. And I've been able to help people who have found themselves in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you know, but in the Chaldean community, it's encouraged if you're pregnant out of wedlock, you get an abortion because you're ruining the family name.
Oh.
Yeah. So a lot of people that I know kind of go that route, even if they don't want to. But I think lately, in more recent years, we've seen a shift in that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, I'm
sorry, my dog.
I can certainly identify. When we were growing up, you're right, there were not a whole lot of conversations about sex. My mother was the type, if you had a question about anything, she was going to produce a book for you to read, but she was not going to sit down and talk to you about it. So, you know, when you came of a certain age, she would have a book ready for you to read on the subject, or if you approached her about anything, she was going to find a book for you to read about it. But she was a very private person, and she would let you know what she thought about things, but it was only after a great deal of prying that you might be able to get an answer from her. Now, my father was a little more forthright. He as well didn't have the actual birds and the bees conversation with you, but he did tell you about the consequences. You know.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Yes, he would always say, you know, he would always tell you what boys were up to, and what they were going to say. What I really appreciate about my father is right before, you know, he raised 8 girls, you know, the girls came first in our family.
Mm-hmm.
So he would always have this talk with us right before we reached puberty. And he would sit you down and he'd say, now you and dad, we get along just swell. We have a lot of fun together, right? You'd be like, yes. And you love dad, dad loves you. Yes. He says, well, something is about to happen to your mind and your body where all of a sudden I'm going to become the stupidest person on the planet. And you're not going to want to listen to anything I have to say. Mm-hmm. But he says, what you should do is get yourself a plan, little girl, because at age 18 and sooner, if you think you're grown, you're going to have to leave my house. Now, one of the things that is quick to get you kicked out of my house, if you bring another person to my house thinking I'm going to take care of them, that's not going to happen. You're going to be out of my house.
Yeah.
He would say such things like that. And he would say, now, as for guys your age usually have one thing on their minds, and they will do anything necessary to get what they want. You're the girl. You set the boundaries. And it's the guy's job to test the boundaries, to see if they hold or not, or where they exactly are. So he was, he was very good about that. He says, you as a girl have far more to lose than a guy would. So you have to think long and hard about the decisions you made. But he put such the fear of pregnancy in our minds that I thought I would get pregnant if I kissed a guy when I was a teenager. Yeah. You should have seen the panic on my face the first time I kissed this boy. And I thought I was pregnant. I was so devastated, Rita. You can't believe how devastated I was.
Oh my God.
Devastated. I was like, oh, my life is over as I know it. And then I called the guy that I kissed, and he was like, what is wrong with you? Because I was crying on the phone. And I was like,
don't tell me you thought, you said, I think I'm pregnant.
I did. I told him, I think I'm pregnant. And he started laughing. Of course, he started laughing. But I was devastated. I said, my dad said this would happen. He said, guys don't care. As long as they get what they want, they'll just write you off after that. And he just started laughing even harder. And then he explained to me, he said, Stephanie, there's no way, there's no physical way that you are pregnant with us just kissing. And I said, no, you're just saying that. Could you just try to leave me on the hook? And he says, no. He says, I need you to go look this up and call me back. I says, okay. So, you know, this is back before cell phones. So you had to actually go find a book, you know? So I went and found a book and I looked and I said, oh, okay. Well, okay, maybe I'm not pregnant. But yeah,
that's story.
That's where I was as a teenager. My mother was in school as long as I have been alive, literally. She has like, what is it, 2 master's degrees?
Nice.
And by the time she was retired, she was a high school principal. But she was always busy, always not available. And trying to have those kind of discussions with your dad at that age was just not happening. So I had to kind of figure some things out. And I was just, like I said, my dad just really scared the daylights out of me. So I kind of was very suspicious for a long time. But it never occurred to me. It never occurred. Abortion was never an option in my mind. I was always thinking about what I would do with the shame and what I would do with, you know, that look on my parents' face, and what would I have to face as a result of being kicked out on my own. But abortion was nowhere in the picture for me. I never, you know, that would be like adding insult to injury, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It was like, no, I couldn't go through that. I mean, how do you live with that? You know, it's one thing to live with the shame of being pregnant, but the shame of, wow, you have to live with that on your conscience. So I have a great deal of compassion for women who have been lied to about this being a viable option. And then in fact, finding out later on that it's actually a stick for the enemy to beat you up with, you know, in so many ways, not to mention all the repercussions that come along with abortion.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing something to
jeopardizing your health.
Yeah. Yeah. You are risking a whole lot with abortion. And I'm very grateful for that. But I don't know if there was a specific time that I just became more pro-life. It just never occurred to me. You know, when you, you can certainly identify with that. You come out of a very strict culture and background where it's just certain things are just not happening. They're just, it's just a no-go for you. And I grew up with those type of parents where peer pressure never sort of affected me because my parents had convinced me that they were crazy. So I was always, you know, when people would try to get me to go along with something, I was always saying, well, I got to go home to my parents and they are insane. So that's not going to work for me. So they did a really good job of convincing me. So I know is a real blessing. You know, at the time when you're a teenager, you don't realize that that's what it is.
Oh yeah. But
it afforded me the chance to sidestep a lot of trouble, a lot of things I just didn't get into because my parents, I was like, oh no, not these people, you know? So I know you, you know what I'm talking
my
about.
My parents.
Yeah. I hear of them. Absolutely.
So you were not able to get away with anything with them. I mean,
no, not at all. Especially when you're down on the food chain, sort of. I'm like third from the top.
Yeah.
As far as my sisters go. And my father told me, he says, you know, when the first one went off and joined the army and the second one, she went off and eloped. And I was the oldest at home. You know, he made like this grand announcement and he says, look, girls, he says, I advise you not to try me. He says, now, what I realize raising girls is that girls are, they have this sub-language. Girls have this layered language thing that I didn't figure out with the first two. So your first two sisters, they could get me to agree to things that I didn't know I was agreeing to. Because
so he learned along the way.
Oh, he did. He learned very well. So he said, girls are very good with, you know, layered language. They can say one thing, but they can mean something completely different. And it's a dog whistle. You know, most men, they don't even hear that. They just, you know, take what you say at face value and without really listening. Mm-hmm. But he says the first two, they got over on me, but I got it now. I got the t-shirt. So girls, I'm telling you, I know the game. He said, girls, when you tell them no, they're already playing chess in their mind of how to bypass your no. They're, you know, they're going to smile back at you and, you know, nod their head. But he said in their minds, they're already, you know, a couple steps ahead of you. So he says that that's tricky raising girls. It's, you know, guys are a little more straightforward, but girls, you have to stay ahead of the game because they're pretty darn smart and they mature so much faster.
Yeah.
and that's one message I wish I could get through, especially to a lot of young women, especially teenagers. I think a lot of women, a lot of young women, no longer sort of realize that there is a maturity gap, you know, when you're a teenager, that, you know, there is a real maturity gap that this guy isn't yet caught up to you. And it's going to take him, my dad said, give him to like 25 or 30 to catch up to where you are now. He says, because it takes men a minute to mature. They don't just mature with time. They have to mature in response to what life throws at them. So he says, with you being a woman, you have to always keep that in mind, that this guy is not thinking, you know, he might be in an 18-year-old's body, but he still might be thinking like a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
So
wise words.
You have to give men a chance to sort of get their bearings. He says it doesn't make them less than, it just means they're different. Men are just different from women. And this whole lie our society is pushing on to young women about, you know, that there's no real difference, you know, as the genders are interchangeable. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it won't fly. I mean, there are so many apparent differences between men and women. They're not just physiological, they're emotional, they're psychological, the way we develop and everything. It's just vastly different.
Oh yeah, it is.
And I think a lot of girls are really cheating themselves, you know, with embracing all the fun things about being a girl and a young woman and coming into maturity as a woman. And we live in a society now that is like pushing young girls to become boys, something you can never be. You can only be a second rate boy, but you can never be a boy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You can only be what you are. So
you cannot change your DNA.
No, I mean, they're missing the best part of being a girl is that, you know, you have a body that reminds you without fail that you were meant to produce and carry life.
Oh, yes.
You know, that's the badge of being a girl. You know, I told this one person who they were celebrating as being a girl. He was born a male. He transitioned to be a girl. And I told him, I said, but you're missing the best part of being a girl, you know? And that is being able to carry life, being able, having a body that is designed for that. I said, yeah, your boobs might be bigger than mine, but that doesn't make you more of a girl. You know, I think you're even more feminine than me in some ways, but that still doesn't make you a girl. You know, it's a birthright. I think we should do a better job of just encouraging girls about how fascinating their bodies are, how fascinating it is, just that identity of being a woman. I think we bought into so many lies. They have a lot of young women thinking that it's some sort of curse now to be a girl, that it's a—
Oh, really?
Yeah, a lot of girls sort of look down on the fact that they're girls. They want to be, they in fact want to be more empowered women to sort of compete with men. And I'm like, why would you want to compete with a man? You're a girl. I mean, it's fabulous to be a girl. So I wouldn't have it any other way. But I am grateful just to be in the fight. I'm hoping we can do more in the pro-life movement to especially get a message to girls about just how incredible life is, what their bodies have been designed to do that is just so unique in all of nature. You know, there's no substitute for it. You know, even though, you know, we live in a society that says, you know, you can have two mommies or two daddies.
Mm-hmm.
We know biologically that's just not possible. Somebody somewhere, there was a woman somewhere that had to carry that baby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so no matter what you say, the DNA does not lie, you know.
Well, I guess you could say the same thing for girls who want to transition into men, you know.
Absolutely.
You have that seed where you can, you know, provide the sperm to actually conceive a child.
Right. But that's just
why they're designed in a specific way.
That's right. That's right. But girls, when they transition, it reminds me of what my father said. There, you have a whole lot more to lose, because once you start taking those hormones and you start cutting off body parts, make you sterile. They're telling the girls that these are reversible things, but they're not really reversible. They do irreversible damage to their organs. And mm-hmm. then when it comes time for them to want to reproduce, in fact, I do have someone that I know that I love who did transition from being a man to a woman. Mm-hmm. And then she, or whatever you want to call her, now wants to have children. So she's trying to stave off the hormones so she can actually get somebody pregnant. And it's like, yeah. she's having a horrible time of it because now you have ruined your body. You know, you uh-huh. have gone against what it was naturally designed to do and cut off its ability to do that. And now you're sort of like, you have buyer's remorse. But this is more serious because it affects life. Oh, not yeah. only her life, but her life of her children. She said, I wish someone had told me way back when that this was a consequence of what I was doing. But I think that is because we just don't really appreciate how amazing and magnificent the female body is. You know, we don't celebrate that as women, what a precious gift we have, what a vital part of the picture that we play. And I think we need to do a better job of getting that across, how vital life is and that we are the source for that. You know, there's not another source for that. You're gonna always need a woman somewhere to carry that life.
Exactly.
Absolutely so.
And how do you share that gift to give life with young people?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. It's sort of challenging now because with the advent of technology, you know, young people sort of look at it just as just another viable option. They don't really consider the consequences involved. They just look at the immediate of how it's going to affect their lives. And the pro-choice movement is quick to tell them, you know, this is a choice you can make. This is just another option of all the options you have on the table, and you can choose it. But I don't think that's actually a viable option to take someone else's life. I don't think we're getting that across loud and clearly enough. Mm-hmm. That this affects their future as well as someone else's.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? My husband. Yeah.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
My husband said something that really made me think. He said, God only knows how many people actually die as a result of one abortion. He mm-hmm. says, we only keep the statistics.
Yeah, because their seed, they just got chills.
Yeah, didn't it? I was like, whoa. Yeah. I didn't think about that, honey. He said,
I haven't thought of it like that either, but wow, I just got chills from that thought. Because yes, I mean, you're killing future generations from that one child.
That's right. He said, God only knows the real number. He said, we only count that one life. He said, but that's not how God counts. God yeah. counts all the lives in that line that are affected. And I said, wow, honey, I never thought about that.
And that wraps it up for our part one of what youth can do in the pro-life movement. This is a two-part episode, so stay tuned to hear from our multicultural outreach department next month. Thank you, and I hope you enjoyed.